23. Poring over the segment of positive, Sensio, the loop in his right eye, said,
Two men, 10 leadys, walking through the Cheyenne ruins in the direction of Lantano's incomplete villa. Wanna blow up?
Yes, Webster Foote said instantly. It had been worth instructing the corporation's satellite briefly to re-enter. They would possess a much better picture now. The room darkened, and then the square of white appeared on the wall. And then that square was modified as the film segment was fed into the projector, which at the same time, at 1200x, magnified. The animator, his dearly prized gadget, began to work. The 12 figures shuffled forward.
The same man, Sensio said, who was with the 2 destructed leadys, but that's not Lantano with him. Lantano is a young man, in his 20s. That man there is middle-aged. I'll get the folio on him and show you.
He disappeared. Webster Foote, alone, continued to watch the animated developing episode. The 12 figures in motion, toiling along. The ex-tanker clearly quite tired. The man with him certainly was David Lantano. Yet, as Sensio said, clearly a man in his late middle age. Strange, Webster Foote said to himself. The radiation must account for it. It's killing him, and this is the fashion that his death is taking. A premature aging. Lantano had better get out of there before it's too late. Before it doesn't matter.
See?
Sensio said, returning with the Lantano folio. He switched on the room lights, halted the animation of the film segment.
Born in 2002, that makes him 23. So, how can that man there...
He shut the room lights off once more.
That is not David Lantano.
His father?
According to the folio, his father died before the war.
Sensio, under a small lamp at the desk, examined the records which the corporation had gathered pertaining to the Yance man David Lantano.
Evidently, Lantano, interestingly, is an ex-tanker. Anyhow, walked out of the San Francisco ruins one day, asked for asylum in one of Runcible's CONAPs, sent routinely to the Berlin Psychiatric Waffen Institute. Mrs. Morgan found him to be of unusual aptitude, recommended that he be admitted to the agency on a trial basis. Began writing speeches. He's doing so now. Brilliant speeches, it says here.
That's him on that screen, Webster Foote said. And the radiation is killing him. So due to his greed to acquire a domain, he's not going to live. And the agency loses a brilliant speechwriter. And he, his life.
He's got a wife and 2 children, so he's not sterile. They all walked out of the SF ruins together. A little family. Touching.
They'll probably die with him before the year's up. Start the animator going again, my boy. Obligingly, Sensio started the animator once more into action. The tired ex-tanker still lagged behind. For an interval, the 2 men were lost behind and within a great semi-standing building. Then, once more, they emerged into the light of day, the leadys stringing in a file behind them. Suddenly, Webster Foote exclaimed, leaned forward.
My God! Stop the animator!
Again, Sensio stopped the action of the scene. The figures froze as they were.
Can you get a greater enlargement of Jess Lantano? Foote asked.
With great skill, Sensio maneuvered the magnifying stages of lenses, manipulated both coarse and fine focuses. The figure on the screen, the first, darker human, grew until there was nothing but him on the screen. Only the one, obviously youthful, vigorous man. Both Sensio and Webster Foote gazed in disconcerted, agitated silence.
Well, my boy, Foote said at last, that knocks the radiation damage theory.
That's how he ought to look. Like he does now. That fits his chronological age.
Foote said, there is, in the advanced weapons archives at the New York Agency, some kind of time-travel weapon which has been tinkered with until it's a scoop they can use for depositing objects into the past. Only Brose has access to it, but what we're seeing now suggests that Lantano has got his hands on either the original weapon or the adaptation made of it by the Agency. I think we would be well advised to have a perpetual vid monitor kept on Lantano, if it's at all possible. Could we plant one on a leady of his immediate entourage?
It's risky, I realize, but if he finds it, all he can do is rip it off. He can't prove who put it there, and we only need a few more shots.
just another handful. The animator, meanwhile, had run the sequence to its limit, unable to carry it any further, and merely buzzed while on the screen the figures once more were frozen. Sensio put on the room lights. Both men moved about, stretching, pondering.
"What few more shots?" Sensio asked.
"Of him, as old as he gets in his oscillations," Foot said.
"Maybe we've seen it, already."
"But maybe not. Do you know?" Foot said, suddenly gripped by his extrasensory hunch experience. It overpowered him. Never had it struck him with such force. "That man is not white. He's a Negro, or an Indian, or something."
"But there aren't any more Indians," Sensio said. "Remember that article circulated just before the war? The ethnic resettlement program established on Mars involved virtually all of them, and they were killed in the first year, when the fighting was confined to Mars. Those who remained behind on Earth..."
"Well, this one's still here," Foot said. "So that's that. We don't need 20 Indians. We need just one. Overlooked, I mean." One of his lab technicians came to the door of the room, knocked respectfully.
"Mr. Foot, sir, a report of that portable TV set that you wanted torn down."
Foot said, "You got it opened, and it's a standard model pre-war Philco 3D color TV portable with..."
"Can't open it."
"What about those Rexoroid bits?" Rexoroid, a compound from Jupiter, generally could penetrate anything. And he had kept one in his London labs for just such occasions as this.
"The case of the object, sir, is Rexoroid. The bit goes in a quarter inch, and then the substance took the edge off the bit, so it won't cut. In other words, we're out one Rexoroid bit. We've sent for more, but they'll have to come from Luna. That's where the nearest available supply exists. None of the Yance men have any, including Eisenblut in Moscow. Or if they do have any, they won't release them. You know how competitive the Yance men are. Afraid if they lend you..."
"Don't sermonize," Foot said. "Just keep trying. Anyhow, I took a look at that case. It's not an alloy at all. It's plastic.
But it's a plastic we've never before seen."
Foot said, "It's an advanced weapon, undoubtedly from the agency's closed archives, although possibly someone dug it up. Anyhow, developed at the end of the war and never used. Do you mean to say you don't recognize the fine German hand when you see it? That's a Gestalt marker. I know it." He tapped his forehead. "This extra knob on my frontal lobe says so, without proof. You get into it and you'll see. Ejectors that spout blood, hair, words, brainwaves, threads, handprints, and," he thought, "a cyanide-tipped homeostatic homeotropic dart. The first and last, that most of all. You've tried heating it, of course."
"Not too high. To about 240. Afraid if we go higher..."
"Try up to 350, and report if it shows any sign of flow."
"All right, sir."
The lab technician departed. Foot said to Sensio, "They'll never get it open. It's not Rexoroid. It's a thermoplastic. But that clever German thermoplastic that flows at one precise split-half degree, above and below, is even harder than Rexoroid. You have to get exactly the proper temperature. Inside, it's got a heating coil that melts it when it wants to change shape. If they keep trying long enough..."
"Or," Sensio said, "if they get it too hot, there won't be anything left inside it but ash."
That was true. The Germans had even thought of that. The mechanism was built so that unusual pressures, such as heat, drills, probes of any sort, acted to trigger a demolition circuit. And the thing did not even burst in a visible way. Its works simply disintegrated, so that one still continued to strive to gain entry. Entry into a gadget which had already long, long ago fused itself into a shapeless nothing works-wise.
"Those late wartime units," Foot thought, "are too clever. Just too damn clever for us mortals. Can you imagine what would have been dreamed up in another year if the autofacts hadn't been destroyed? All the surface shops and labs and proving grounds, like that one sole outfit that made Artiforgs."
The intercom clicked on, and Miss Gray said,
"Sir, Yanceman David Lantano is on the line wanting you. Are you in?"
Foot glanced at Sensio.
Saw the satellite re-enter.
knows we took extra careful shots of him. He's going to ask why. Rapidly, he tried to think why. The ex-tanker? Good. He had something there, because, according to law, Lantano had to turn over any tanker who bored through within his domain area to the Berlin psychiatrists. Into the intercom, he said, "Put Lantano on, Miss Gray." On the big vid screen, the face of David Lantano appeared, and Webster Foote saw, fascinated, that it was the youthful phase of the age oscillation or cycle. In any case, it was the proper 23-year-old man who confronted him.
"I have never had the pleasure of making your acquaintance," Foote said politely. Yansman, as a general rule, enjoyed this sort of bending the knee. "However, I know your reading matter. Extraordinary."
Lantano said, "We would like an artiforge. A pancreas."
"Oh, dear."
"You can locate one. Dug up. We will pay highly."
"There aren't any."
Foote thought, "Why? Who needs it? You? Did your ex-tanker friend bore to the surface for it? Probably the latter, and you are being charitable or anyhow going through the motions."
"Not a chance, Mr. Lantano."
And then an idea came to him.
"Allow me," he said, "to visit your villa, however, for a few moments. I have some maps, military maps, from the war, which indicate areas not dug into, which conceivably might contain stored artiforges. These were U.S. Air Force hospitals in remote places, Alaska, North Canada, on the old picket line fringes, and on the East Coast. Perhaps between us..."
"Fine," Lantano agreed. "What about 9 p.m. at my villa? 9 as computed by my time zone here. For you, that would be..."
"Sir, I can count time," Foote said. "I'll be there, and I'm sure, with your extraordinary abilities, you'll be able to make use of these maps. You can dispatch your own ladies if you wish, or my corporation can..."
"At 9 tonight, my time then," Lantano said, and rang off.
"Why?"
Sensio asked Foote after a pause.
Foote said, "To plant the continual vid monitor."
"Of course," Sensio flushed.
"Run that animated sequence again," Foote said thoughtfully, "of Lantano at middle age. Stop it at the point where he has aged the most. I noticed a quality about him just now on the vid screen."
As he again set up the magnifying equipment, the film, the animator, the projector, Sensio said,
"What quality?"
"It seemed to me," Foote said, "that Lantano, as he aged, began to resemble someone. I could not place who, but someone I know well." As he had faced even the young Lantano on the big vid screen, he had experienced it, the déjà vu. A moment later, in the darkened room, he was viewing a still of Lantano at middle age, but seen from above, again, the angle was bad, and always would be when the photographing instrument was so vertically oriented as a satellite naturally had to be. But he could discern it anyhow, because as the satellite made its pass, both Lantano and the ex-tanker came to a halt and peered up.
"I know who," Sensio said suddenly. "Talbot Yancey."
"Except that he's dark," Foote said. "This man here."
"But if that skin bleach were applied, that wartime dermal..."
"No. Yancey is considerably older. When we get a good shot of Lantano at, say, 65, not 50, then maybe we'll have something. And when I have got inside his villa," Foote knew, "we will thereafter have operating the equipment to produce that shot. And this will be tonight, only a few more hours." "What is this Lantano?" he asked himself, and got no answer. At least, not yet. But over the years he had learned to be patient. He was a professional. He would, in Lantano's incomplete villa, establish a video monitor which sooner or later would tell him additional facts, and ultimately one day, hopefully not too long from now, the pivotal fact would emerge and all would be tied together. The deaths of Davidson, Higg, and Lindblom, the destruct of the two Lettys, the peculiar aging of Lantano, and, as he aged, that even queerer fact that he grew more and more to resemble a plastic and metal dummy bolted to a wooden desk in New York City. Oh, Foote thought. Then that would explain the peculiar and up to now anomalous strip of film which showed the origin of the destruct beam that took out the two Lettys.
It was, we had thought, someone resembling Talbot Yancey. It was David Lantano, at the extreme old end of his oscillation. We have seen it already. The key fact had already emerged. Bros, he thought, you have made a major mismove. You have lost your monopoly on the contents of the Advanced Weapons Archives. Someone else has gotten hold of time travel equipment, and he is using it to destroy you. How did he get hold of it? That doesn't matter. That he has it, that's the point. Gottlieb Fischer, he said aloud. The idea for Yancey originated with him, so the crisis is actually in the past. And he who possesses the ability to travel in time has access to the past, he realized. There is a junction, a connection between David Lantano, who or whatever he is, and Gottlieb Fischer back in 1982 or 4, or right up to Fischer's death, but no later than his death, and probably slightly before Fischer began his work on the Yancey Princip, his variation on the Führer Princip. This new solution to the problem of who shall lead, since, if men are too blind to govern themselves, how can they be trusted to govern others? The answer is der Führer, as every German knows, and Gottlieb Fischer was a German. Bros then stole the idea from Fischer, as we all know, and turned that idea into an actuality. The dummy, one in Moscow and one in New York, bolted to the oak desk, programmed by the computer which in turn is fed speeches by well-trained elite idea men. All that can be legitimately credited to Stanton Bros, but what we did not guess is that Gottlieb Fischer stole his part, the original germinal concept, from someone else. Sometime near the year 1982, the German film producer saw Talbot Yancey, and derived his Führer, not from his own creativity, his artistic genius, but from simple observation. And who would Gottlieb Fischer, circa 1982, be seeing? Actors. Hundreds of them. Sorted over to play roles in his two vast phony documentaries. Actors picked especially for their ability to portray world leaders. In other words, actors who had that charisma. The magic. To Sensio, he said slowly, thoughtfully, plucking his lower lip, I think if I comb versions A and B, the two Fischer works of invention, I will in one of the faked scenes, sooner or later, come across a Talbot Yancey. In makeup, of course, doing a character role. Playing Stalin, he decided. Or Roosevelt. Any of them. Or all. What the documentaries lacked were proper credits. Who played what great world leader? We need that list. And that list does not, and never did, exist. It was carefully not made. Sensio said, We own our own prints of the two versions, you realize. All right. Go through them and extract each of the faked scenes. Separate them from the authentic clips that... Sensio laughed sardonically. Good Lord, save us! He shut his eyes, rocked back and forth. Who honestly can ever do that? No one knew then, knows now, will know... True. A good point. The whole point, in fact. All right, Foot said. Just start running them until you catch a glimpse of the Protector. He'll be one of the great charismatic leaders, one of the big four. He won't be Mussolini or Chamberlain, so you can bypass them. God in heaven, he thought. Suppose he's the Hitler who lands in the Boeing 707 fanjet at Washington, D.C. to hold secret conversations with FDR. Is that what rules the millions of tankers today? The actor who struck Gottlieb Fischer as just right to undertake the task of impersonating Adolf Hitler? It could, however, be a bit part. The role of some general. Even one of those G.I. Joe scenes in the foxholes. It'll take me weeks, Sensio said, obviously realizing the same thing. And do we have weeks? If people are being killed... Joseph Adams is protected, Foot said. And Bros. Too bad if he gets it. More power to his hidden enemy. His hidden enemy, who is obviously and clearly David Lantano. But that merely led back to his original inquiry. Who or what is David Lantano? Anyhow, now he had a partial answer. At least ad hoc. It had yet to be tested. David Lantano, at the extreme old age end of his oscillation,
was hired by Gottlieb Fischer to play a part, or was at least interviewed in one or the other versions of the 1982 documentaries. There, that was his hypothesis, and now to test it. And the next step was going to be hard, the step which followed the positive identification of Yancey, that is, David Lantano, in one or both of the 1982 documentaries. The next step, and this fitted the talents of Webster Foote Limited of London, was to chisel with highly specialized equipment, undetected and silently, into the incomplete villa of David Lantano while Lantano was at the agency in New York, and gain at least momentary possession of the time travel instrumentality which Lantano utilized. It'll be tough, Foote knew, but we have the machines to track it down. It's been our job since 2014, and this time we are not merely doing a job for a client. This is for ourselves. Because, he realized, our own lives are currently and involuntarily posted as stakes in this. It is, has already proven to be, the ultimate pot for which the players are wagering, striving, lying, faking, and haggling. A law firm, he said aloud. Wagering, striving, lying, faking, and haggling associates. They can represent us before the Recon Dissian Council when we sue bros. On what grounds? On the grounds, Foote said quietly, that the duly elected world leader is the protector, Talbot Yancey, as every tanker knows, as the Estes Park government has asserted for 15 consecutive straight years, and such a man really exists. Hence, Brose holds no legal power. Since the legal power, he said to himself, is QED all Yancey's, and Pac Piop, as well as West Dem, has been claiming, chanting this. And, I think, Yancey has begun to put forth a request for the validation of that claim, Foote decided. At last.